This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Moms and dads face a choice. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
To vaccinate or not to vaccinate kids ages 5 to 11. Here are the questions parents need to be asking.
On the personal finance front, if your tendency is to head for the exits during stock market downturns, we'll have a new strategy to consider.
If your suburban neighborhood is overrun with the sound of gas-powered leaf blowers, hear advice from one homeowner on fighting back.
And thanks to supply chain scariness, many families are turning to do-it-yourself Halloween costumes and decorations.
People who are big fans of Halloween are finding creative ways around some of the supply chain backlogs. Some people are creating their own giant pumpkins. Some who are very handy went all the way to creating their own giant sarcophagus.
Alex Janin at the Wall Street Journal on families haunted by shortages this Halloween. Well, when U.S. borders open to foreign travelers on November 8th, the country will have lifted one of the longest standing restrictions imposed 19 months ago at the start of the pandemic, signaling a new phase of guarded optimism in the nation's battle with COVID-19. It's a story by Joe Barrett, senior Midwest correspondent at the Wall Street Journal. Joe, give us the basics.
Starting next week, foreign travelers who are vaccinated will be able to come into the U.S. for the first time since March 2020. It is kind of a turning point. That was one of the first big restrictions that were, put on everybody for COVID and, leading to all the lockdowns and stuff like that. So, we're finally easing back off one of these things that's been in place for so long. So it does feel like a moment.
All right. One of the places you looked at was Buffalo, New York, which is going to welcome back, I guess, Canadians, obviously by land across the land border. What does it mean for a place like Buffalo?
Yeah, they, the economy there is really tied in with the Canadian economy. There's a bridge over the Niagara River that, brings in a lot of visitors. They're big sports fans. So 10% of the Buffalo Bills season ticket holders are from Canada. A lot of hockey fans coming to see the Sabres games and then, shoppers and everything else, especially when the currency is favorable, you'll get a crazy amount of Canadians coming over.
Right. Explain some of the good news on this front and then shift a little bit to some of the bad news, maybe some of the stuff we're still watching with regards to COVID.
Yeah, well, the Delta variant is, new cases are receding pretty much everywhere in the country now, which is, obviously good news for everybody. Deaths are still pretty high, but that's kind of a lagging indicator to the cases, people were catching, weeks or months ago. The worrying signs are Britain has been through this, and they actually have a higher vaccination rate than us. So they started to reopen things, and they're hitting sort of a second wave of the Delta variant. So, you never know when this thing is beat.
Yeah, and they have a higher vaccination rate than us.
That's right. Yeah, they've done a better job about getting the word out and getting people vaccinated. That's a troubling.
Wow. We're speaking with Joe Barrett, senior Midwest correspondent at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called U.S. COVID-19 Battle Turns a Corner as Borders Open to Foreign Travelers. Lots of folks have their eyes on that November 8th date. Of all things, pumpkin patches, you said, are doing well.
Yeah, they did pretty well last year because there wasn't a lot of other things for families to do. There was no sports or youth sports or, stuff like that. But this year they're doing even better because there are fewer restrictions. Not everybody's wearing a mask. They're not so worried about social distancing. So, yeah, things are going gangbusters down at the pumpkin patch.
Still a struggle, though, at some of the national parks or monuments.
Yeah, I looked at the Arch National Monument in St. Louis, just because I always think that one's an interesting one. And, they can't get enough people in the elevators right now. You have to sort of be in your own family unit, so they can't pack people into the elevators up to the top of the arch. And they canceled a couple of annual events that bring in a lot of people. So this year they're doing better than last year, but not nearly, you know, pre-pandemic levels.
All right. So with the borders reopening to foreign nationals, then is there a sense that there's pent up demand from overseas? Do folks from, say, the UK want to come here to the US?
I would assume there's some people who've been delaying their travel up until now. You know, I mean, business travel and trade and stuff like that has been going on if it was considered essential. But yeah, I imagine there are some people who want to come see their family or, you know, make that trip to Broadway or whatever. So, yeah, I think so.
How about on the restaurant side, you found an interesting example in Iowa with regards to supply chain stuff.
Yeah, they're still struggling, you know, restaurants with bringing in or having enough staff. And they're also, you know, short of certain items that are just caught in this sort of global supply chain. Apparently, chicken tenders are a hot item. And so I spoke with a guy who he owns like eight, or he's the chef and one of the owners of eight restaurants. And, you know, he's going to Costco and Sam's Club and regular grocery stores, just kind of buying every chicken nugget he can find. And then a bunch of other things that he's running out of.
Wow. And that's normally stuff that would be delivered.
Yeah, their suppliers just aren't coming through with some of the things that they're ordering.
Thanks, Joe. Joe Barrett, Midwest correspondent at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, questions about vaccines for kids.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Parents are likely soon to be faced with a choice. Would they rather take the small chance of their child falling seriously ill from COVID, or the even smaller chance that they'll be harmed by the shots intended to protect against it? To help with that decision, USA Today has summarized the data presented to the FDA advisory panel, including what is known and what remains unknown. In-depth analysis from Karen Weintraub, health reporter at USA Today. Karen, what should we know?
It's very, very clear that adults should be vaccinated, teenagers, older kids. It's still, on balance, it still makes sense for a 5 to 11-year-old to be vaccinated, but I do think there's a little bit more room for parents to say, to ask questions and to question the data, because there really isn't that much data yet.
Yeah, it wasn't a giant group that's been studied, right? So that leaves parents where? This is just unknowns here.
Right. So the trials included about 5,000 children, about 1,500 got placebo and 3,500 got the active vaccine. So it's enough to show that there are no common terrible side effects. You know, it's generally very safe. The side effects are the same that we see in adults: headaches, sore arm, fatigue, that sort of thing. But it can't tell super rare side effects. Neither could a trial of 30 or 40,000, which is what was done in adults to initially prove the safety of the vaccine. So really, you know, to see the one in a million problems, you need a million shots in arms. And that's only going to happen when the vaccine is authorized.
Yeah. The risks are theoretical, as you say.
Exactly. The risks of COVID are known. The risks of the vaccine are theoretical.
Mm. Where do doctors weigh in on this in terms of advising families with kids who are ages 5 to 11?
I think most doctors will come down on the same side that the experts did on this panel, which is to say you should get your kids vaccinated, particularly if a child is at high risk because of obesity or health problems or lives with somebody who is at high risk. Then I think it's extremely clear that it makes sense to have the child vaccinated. But 1/3 of the kids who've been hospitalized with COVID did not have any pre-existing conditions. So, you know, if you have a healthy kid, you know, that's important to know as well.
We're speaking with Karen Weintraub, health reporter at USA Today, and she's written a piece entitled COVID Vaccines for Kids Aren't as Clear-Cut as for Adults. All right, how about some of these unknowns? You know, one of the subjects that always comes up in these discussions is like myocarditis.
Right. So myocarditis is the swelling of the heart muscle in the area around the heart. And it can be quite serious. The cases they've seen as a result of vaccines have not been that serious. Almost all of them left the hospital one doctor told me that we wouldn't even have kept them in the hospital at all, but we've never seen this before. So we want to make sure there's nothing really serious about it. But generally, it resolves within a couple of days without any lingering problems, as far as they can tell. I should say that it's been seen much more commonly in young men, particularly 16, 17 year old boys. It seems are the hardest hit group so far. And the young men are also most likely to suffer myocarditis, regardless of vaccine or infection status. So it's the group that sees this problem the most. They think possibly because of testosterone, that younger kids don't see it as much because they have less testosterone.
All right. You broke out in your story too something called other factors to consider for parents. Explain those.
So one of the things I think is really important that we don't often think about is the background infection rate. How bad is COVID right now in my area? If I'm living in a place where, you know, I'm hearing ambulances go by, where there's a refrigerated truck at the hospital because it's overflowing the morgue, you know, that's a situation where there's a lot of cases, and I'm more likely to encounter COVID in my daily life. My kid is more likely. And there, I would say it's very clear that the risk of getting COVID is very high. If you live in an area where nobody's seen a COVID case in 3 weeks, and really is pretty much seems like it's under control, then I think it's less obvious that the need is there. The problem is you can't predict the future. So as we saw, unfortunately, with the Delta variant, there are variants that can come along that change the calculus, that change the situation pretty rapidly. And it does take 4-6 weeks for vaccines to reach full potency. And so it's hard to predict what's going to happen in the future.
Thanks, Karen. Karen Weintraub, health reporter at USA Today. Coming up next, DIY Halloween. So the year plus of remote meetings is ending, right? Time to get back to the office. So about that beard. If you've realized the scruffy look that worked on a webcam isn't fitting the all-business look you're trying to get back to, don't worry. Harry's can help. Harry's crafts high-quality, long-lasting blades and durable, weighted handles that make a close, comfortable shave quick and, believe it or not, enjoyable. And refill blades start as low as $2. New customers can get started with Harry's with a starter set, a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel cover, usually $13. For just $3. The starter set and the incredibly close shave convinced me right away to switch to Harry's. I've been using Harry's for years. I think you'll love it too. There's never been a better time to try Harry's. Go to harrys.com/deal to get their starter set for just $3. 100% satisfaction guaranteed, so you've got nothing to lose. harrys.com/deal to get the special offer. HARRYS. harrys.com/deal. Glad you're with us. Halloween decorations and costumes have been haunted by a backlog of container ships at U.S. ports, causing delays and shortages. This year, many consumers are resorting to do-it-yourself alternatives. More from this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
So the holiday has prompted some people to get extra creative this year. Alex Janin of the Wall Street Journal is here with the latest. Alex, what are some of the do-it-yourself decorations you wrote about?
Well, it ranges from costumes to decor. So people who are big fans of Halloween are finding creative ways around some of the supply chain backlogs. Some people are creating their own giant pumpkins. Some who are very handy went all the way to creating their own giant sarcophagus. Others are trying to do their own version of Halloween costumes for their kids. So I spoke to a couple folks who, you know, one of them made actually a backhoe caterpillar costume for her son out of cardboard boxes she found in the neighborhood.
Where are they getting their ideas?
Well, for costumes, you know, kids often have very specific requests. And some parents I spoke to said those requests change quite often. And so they wait, you know, they wait until the week or the weeks ahead of the holiday. And this year, unfortunately, that's just too late. A lot of costumes are out of stock. They can't get them in their kids' size. You know, brick and mortar stores, the shelves are just wiped clean. So their kids will say, hey, I really like this character. Or, you know, in the case of this one kid I was mentioning, I really want to be some sort of construction vehicle. And they say, all right, I'll look online. I'll see what I can find. And we'll sort of piece together what we can from material we have around the house. One mom said she was going to use her son's soccer socks as part of her daughter's Halloween costume. She wanted to be Willow the werewolf. So they're piecing together what they can find. Others are looking at Facebook groups, neighborhood Facebook groups, and saying, help, anyone have ideas? So they're sort of crowdsourcing here.
We're speaking with Alex Janin of the Wall Street Journal. Now, I know that this may age me, but when I was a kid, we always made our own costumes. Is this something new? Is it coming back? What's the story?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've heard from a lot of folks since the story published that this is not new. We've done DIY forever. So I think there are still plenty of parents and Halloween fans in general who do DIY every year. But, you know, as Halloween has sort of gotten bigger and bigger and, you know, big box stores are carrying really elaborate costumes, I think people just found it easier for years to shop online and shop in stores for sort of pre-made costumes. And now that there are shortages and delays, and for those costumes that are still in stock, the prices have just absolutely skyrocketed. They're sort of returning to childhood DIY days and saying, you know what, let me just do my best with what I've got at home.
Yeah, all through the pandemic, we've read stories and talked about people who have been cooking at home and doing home projects, and this kind of seems like an extension of the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that's right. People are certainly stocking up on tools. They're sort of getting used to borrowing what they can from their neighbors. You know, people made great use of these groups on Facebook for other things, as you mentioned, for cooking or, you know, tips on how to do things around the house. And sort of people, I think, are in the habit of just asking around, you know, asking their neighbors, asking their friends, hey, is there anything that you have that I can borrow? Or do you have any tips or ideas for me? Because, you know, going out and getting something in stores is, you know, for some people still don't feel safe. And for others, it's just not guaranteed with the supply chain shortages.
Alex, your story also notes that some people started on these projects over the summer. Is that another case of we had a little more time or we were home more?
I think both of those things, yeah. Also, you know, people are really, really excited to celebrate Halloween this year, so they started early. According to the National Retail Federation, Halloween spending is going to reach an all-time high this year of more than $10 billion. People are really, really excited about celebrating Halloween, and they're celebrating it all different ways. And I think part of the reason is last year, you know, sort of really in the peak of the pandemic, there just weren't many Halloween celebrations. So Halloween is back. People are really excited. They started early. And I think savvy shoppers also knew that supply chain shortages might be an issue. So they got started early. Some people I spoke to started shopping as early as June and July. And other people, yeah, they had more time to kill. So they started piecing together their own things over the summer, and they worked on it all the way until this fall.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Wall Street Journal reporter Alex Janin. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. No matter what kind of wireless plan you have from any of the big wireless providers, they've all got one thing in common: the catch. The part where too good to be true has too many extra charges to be worth it. But Mint Mobile figured it out. They offer premium wireless service starting at just $15 a month. What's the catch? There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is they only sell wireless service online. No retail overhead saves them and you a lot of money. You can also keep your number and your phone, no losing your existing contacts, and get unlimited talk, text, and high-speed data on the nation's largest 5G network, again, for as low as $15 a month. And if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money-back guarantee. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/Gordon. That's mintmobile.com/Gordon. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka coming up this half hour. On the personal finance front, intrinsic value. Plus, a man battling the evil leaf blowers. And a massive Halloween skeleton as big as a house that's become a viral sensation in Ohio. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, this year's World Series is a clash between two skippers with the oldest combined age in history.
Jared Diamond, baseball writer for The Wall Street Journal, says in an industry that mostly views field skippers as little more than glorified middle managers, the matchup between 72-year-old Dusty Baker of the Astros and 66-year-old Brian Snitker of the Braves serves as an important reminder of the power of experience. Jared, take us through it.
Nobody ever would have imagined that Dusty Baker would be managing the Astros of all teams. The Astros were the single most cutting-edge technology and analytics-based team in the major leagues. They were never going to hire sort of an old dinosaur like Dusty Baker, but we all know what happened to the Astros. They get caught up in the sign-stealing scandal that really rocked the organization. Their manager gets fired. Their general manager gets fired. Everything's in crisis. So what do you do when you're in a crisis? You go out and you hire Dusty Baker because he's going to be able to bring a credible face to an organization that really needed one at that moment. And he's now been there for 2 years, and now they're in the World Series. And in the case of Atlanta with Brian Snitker, very similar situation in some ways. Brian Snitker is a real loyalist. He's been with the Braves in some capacity since the 70s. He was a minor league player. He was a minor league coach. He was a minor league manager. He was a major league coach, but never was really seen as a managerial candidate. But they had a situation a few years back where their manager gets fired in the middle of the season. They needed someone to take over on an interim basis. They say, all right, Brian, you're the guy. Our team is terrible. We're rebuilding. Who really cares? They bring him back the next year. Again, the team is terrible. They're rebuilding. Who really cares? But then a funny thing happens in 2018. The Braves general manager at the time, John Coppolella, gets kicked out of baseball for life. Similar situation to the Astros because of a scandal involving Latin American players and illegal dealings with amateurs. And they bring in a new general manager who says, all right, let's just give this a year, see what happens. Brian Snitker gets to stay. And guess what happens in 2018? The Braves win the division. Brian Snitker wins manager of the year. And suddenly he's ensconced. And now here we are in 2021. These two managers that no one ever imagined would be working in baseball at all are meeting in the World Series.
Jeez. Do these guys embrace today's analytics?
You know, their reputations, of course, is that they don't, at least compared to many other managers that you would see today. The trend for managers in the last, really going back 5, 6, 7 years, has been to hire first-time managers, young guys, guys that are experienced in analytics, and perhaps more important, guys that are willing to, let's call it, work collaboratively with the front office. Sort of the idea of the general in the dugout running the show.
Yeah.
That's long gone. Managers have far less power today than they did before, and far less power than they did when Dusty Baker was sort of rising as a manager. So it's a challenge, I think, for them to understand that in this new world order, you don't have final decision-making authority. You do have to work very closely with the front office. So it's, you know, a little bit different for them. But the one thing I'll give them both credit for is they have embraced some of sort of the new innovations. I look at a team like the Braves specifically. When Brian Snitker started with the Braves, they were last in the major leagues or at the very bottom of the major leagues every year in defensive shifts and how often they deployed the defensive shift. Well, now it's 2021 and the Braves are actually near the top of the major leagues in defensive shifts. And that tells you that Brian Snitker has warmed up to some of these ideas and blending his old school sensibilities with new school innovation.
We're speaking with Jared Diamond, national baseball writer at The Wall Street Journal. His story is called The Old Men and the Series. This fall classic features the oldest managerial matchup ever. Will the success of these guys have general managers or clubs in general rethinking older guys as managers?
I hope so. I don't expect we're going to suddenly see an influx of 70-year-olds in dugouts, although Tony La Russa did get hired by the White Sox last year, and he's 77 now, and they were in the playoffs this year, so that worked out okay for them. But like, I don't think we're going to see just a sudden throwback to the way it was. But I do think that this is similar to many areas in baseball where things changed. There was innovation. There was progress. And it led to the pendulum shifting so far away from tradition and toward the new to where I think in a lot of these things, manager hires maybe being one, there might be a little bit of a correction back toward the center. And I say this about a lot of things, about things like defensive shifting, about the rise in strikeouts, and all these sort of issues. It's never going back to the way it was in the 70s and 80s. We know too much. We have too much data to ever go back to that, for better or worse. But I do think we're going to start seeing certain things in the game slide back a little bit to more of an equilibrium.
Thanks, Jared. Jared Diamond, baseball writer at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, if you head for the hills during market downturns.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. When the next downturn in the stock market occurs, many investors will rush for the exit, fearful that their stock holdings will soon be worth little or nothing. But that brings up one of the most important investment concepts, intrinsic value. Jonathan Clements at HumbleDollar.com is here to explain it. Jonathan, help us out.
Well, we all know, Gordon, that when the market goes down, there is some minority investors who panic and sell. And among the rest, a lot of people are simply frozen in the headlights. They don't know what to do when the market drops. They fear that their stock holdings and their stock funds are headed to zero. In preparation for the next downturn, it will happen, I don't know when, I think that a concept that people really need to embrace is something called intrinsic value. The idea that underlying these quotations that we see all over the internet for our stocks and our stock funds are companies of real value. And to some degree, we can calculate what that value is.
All right. How so? How do you do that?
So the most popular method is something called the dividend discount model. And essentially what you do is you project how much the stocks and, say, the S&P 500 are going to kick off in dividends in the years ahead. So you can project forward the amount of dividends that are going to be paid by the S&P 500 by taking the current dividend yield, projecting the growth of those dividends, and then discounting that value back to what it would be worth today. So one of the reasons for this discounting is a dividend that you get today is more valuable than a dividend that you might get, say, 10 years from now, because in between times, you know, the dividend you got today, you could spend, you could reinvest it, but the dividend that you get 10 years from now isn't going to be worth as much because of inflation and because it may never get paid. So we have this dividend discount model where we take all the dividends that we think the S&P 500 is going to pay in the years ahead, and then we discount it today so we can get a current value.
Who's we doing this discounting? Me? Or like experts like yourself? Who's supposed to do this?
It's actually, and I have to confess this, Gordon, I'm not that strong at math, but there is this wonderful thing called Excel. And you can put an equation into Excel. You can put in the current dividend yield for the S&P 500. You can project a growth rate for those dividends. You can figure out a discount rate. And then it will tell you, roughly speaking, what the S&P 500 is worth today. And if you do that, what you find is that the intrinsic value for the S&P 500 is about where it currently is, that the market is not at a crazy valuation level.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder and editor at HumbleDollar.com. Coming up next, fighting gas-powered leaf blowers. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy. Thanks for being with us. Is your suburban neighborhood far noisier than usual this year? Maybe you've got a guy like Rick Newman at Yahoo Finance in your neighborhood. In addition to the ubiquitous roar of gas-powered leaf blowers that bother him to no end, there is now the sound of him fighting back by blaring music that you may not like. Rick, what are you up to?
It's absolutely horrible. I live in the suburbs, and for anybody who might live in a city and thinks of the suburbs as leafy and peaceful, that is actually not the case anymore. They're noisy as hell, and it's maybe mainly because landscaping companies that take care of most of the lawns in my neighborhood are just constantly blowing these gas-powered leaf blowers. I'm one of the pains in the ass who is always complaining about it. And this year, instead of just complaining, I decided to actually do something about it. So I told my offending neighbors, look, you know, obviously everyone's just going to keep blowing these machines. And by the way, they're banned in the summer where I live.
Oh,
and
wow.
People use them anyway. People don't care. So I said, whenever your leaf blower goes off, I'm going to put my guitar amplifier outside. It's a 70-watt guitar amplifier. I'm going to crank up some heavy metal or hip hop, and I'm going to give you as much screechingly loud music as you give me screechingly loud leaf blowers. So my neighborhood's been a little noisier than usual lately, but it's because I'm fighting back and making some noise of my own. And I'm not sure I'm accomplishing much, Gordon, but it makes me feel better.
You know, there's a reason the guys that operate those things wear those earphones.
Well, yeah, I mean, gas-powered leaf blowers are basically 1970s technology that are completely outdated technologically. First of all, these are horrible polluters. And, you know, it kind of strikes me that people don't seem to care at all that these things emit so much pollution. There's no kind of pollution control on a leaf blower or a lawnmower, for that matter. And one leaf blower used for one day can emit more pollution than a pickup truck driven for a year. I mean, it's just astounding how much pollution these things belch out, and you can smell it. They operate at 100 decibels or more, which is, you know, like standing at the front of a rock concert. They can cause hearing loss, which is why the people who use them often are wearing headphones, but they don't give headphones out to everybody else. I have one neighbor who used to blow this thing with his headphones on, and I said, hey, I want some headphones. Every time you use it, why don't you bring me some headphones too and everybody else? And then I did give him a taste of some heavy metal one day, and he stopped using his blower. He uses an electric one now. So I guess that's a small step forward, but there's just still, I mean, it's just the horror, especially during the fall when the leaves actually fall and these things arguably have some use. There are days when all you can hear is a leaf blower and you can't even hold a conversation.
Thanks, Rick. Rick Newman, senior columnist at Yahoo Finance. Well, finally, a homeowner in Ohio decided to decorate big this year and has become a viral star. In response, this Halloween fan decided to take advantage of the opportunity and raise money for charity. Fox News says it took him about 40 days to build a massive skeleton. It looks like it's larger than his house. The skeleton is made of foam and is held together with PVC pipes. The final result has turned his home in Olmsted Falls, Ohio, into a local attraction. He designed the decoration to look like a massive skull was busting through the roof of his house. An arm is also popping up out of the side of the house and is then attached to a hand large enough to hold a person. A second large hand is visible clutching the other side of the house. Due to the house's popularity, the man said he's participating in a grassroots fundraising program known as Skeletons for St. Jude, which raises money for the Children's Hospital. The fundraiser uses Halloween decorations to get attention and offers opportunities to donate money. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.